Station number 10699.
Brigadier Rymer Jones, Reel 21. You were telling me about the situation of the La Régence and how...
Yes, well, it was it was down below the basement, which you could go from the hotel down to the passageway in the basement, right along there to the other end where La Régence was, and that part was semi-detached. That's what many people don't understand. It wasn't military headquarters. It was La Régence was under the Secretariat, which was in that direction. Well, Giles Bay, my head of CID, came to me and said, Begin is plotting, we've got this fact, to blow up the King David from La Régence.
Where would he have got that information from, Bay?
Where would he have got it from?
Yes, how would
Well,
he
was head of a most remarkable thing. It wasn't only ordinary CID, it was everything. It was Richard Catling, who was a deputy superintendent, was in charge of the marvellous show, which was the CID political, was in two parts, Arab and Jew. You see? Now, they were most remarkable. He became Sir Richard Catling afterwards when he was in Kenya. But the stuff we got out was quite remarkable. I have had put on my table the verbatim account of what had happened at a Jewish, Jewish agency conference,
but,
word for word, put in front of me.
But how? What would his sources be to what Begin was doing? Because they're another stage beyond, aren't they? The Jewish agency. How did he tell? Would he tell?
Well,
you
I
what?
Say this is the whole thing. This is the whole thing. We'd shot him to bits. I don't know if you've read one of my favourite books, which I've just rereading, funnily enough, and that's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Well, that gives you some idea of how you can shoot away the secrecy of anything. That's why we get so excited when MI6 do these silly things. At any rate...
Would he actually tell... I mean, when he came to you to tell you that Begin was planning this, would he actually tell you how he knew? Or would he just... Or was that secret?
Well, damn it, I was his boss. I knew... He was only doing the CID part of my show.
So do you remember what the source was in that particular case?
No, that's up to him. He was an assistant inspector. Let me finish this and you can put the additional question to me afterwards. But he came to me and he said, Begin is plotting this. So I went to the chief secretary the next morning, and I said, this is what's going to happen, and I want to close La Régence. He said, you can't do that, IG, because they've got a little enough way of getting their amusements and so on, you're taking away. I said, that's not correct. I know for a fact, because I've been out to Talpioth and danced under the stars and had dinner there, and that's nothing but Jews. I said, as a matter of fact, La Régence is almost entirely used by the British. He said, well, you can't do it. So I went to the GOC. I said, look, you know, we must do something about this. We can't let that lie. So he very unwillingly said, all right, we'll do it, you see. So I said, well, I want to see the High Commissioner. Of course, I was seeing him quite normally, but on this particular thing. And I'm bringing the GOC along too. So we went up. And they said to me, all right, IG, what's your case? So I told them. They said, what do you want? I said, I want to close, and not only that, but but we've got no proper protection at all. I want every entrance to the hotel and to the building covered by static police, you see, or military, if you like. And if the hamburger, the general manager of the hotel, if he and the GOC agrees, I want on the two floors, or on the one main floor, above the hotel, which has been taken over by the GOC and his headquarters, at the end, where it joins up to the secretariat part of the building, the southern part, and in the place above, I want that blocked and sandbagged, and a reputable Irish Arab guard on a day and night. I probably asked for too much because I didn't get anything.
And when did this take place? Do you remember when this warning and your first effort?
Yes, it was in November. No. It was in November 1945. November 1945.
How did you feel about your warning being rejected and none of these defensive preparations being put in?
I was furious. In fact, but that isn't the whole story. Just before I was leaving, I'd already handed over, but Giles Bale came to me again at my house at night and said, well, of course, they had planned last November to do this, but then something happened where they said, well, we're not quite sure that we can definitely give a date for it and so on. But now we have news that it will definitely take place. It may not be, these were his actual words, it may not be tomorrow, next week, next month, or even next year, but they're going to do it. So this was the day before I left and came home to England, that I went at 8 o'clock in the morning, and that's when, because we worked very hard, you know, in those days. 8 o'clock in the morning, the secretariat would be there, and I went to the chief secretary, and I said, this is absolutely certain. And he said, don't try and bring that up again, IG. I don't believe it. And if it did happen, I should probably be the first to be killed. So I went away a very sad man. And when I went to, what was his name, the chief secretary? He was, well, he went on, I think he was knighted, the chap at the colonial office. Very, very nice fellow. And he said, you're getting this thing of all your officer promotions from you. You can't get something which I didn't expect to get, to be called the Royal Palestine Constabulary. I said, I knew I couldn't get that because we're not a crown colony, you see. But he said, at any rate, you're getting it. I said, well, that's very nice. He said, is there anything else? I said, well, there is, you know. I said, we're on very tricky ground here. Because I am still on paid leave for the Palestine government. I'm the fourth officer of government in Palestine still. And I've done my bit to warn people, and I've failed. And so that, in a way, the chief secretary, Cunningham, was a delightful fellow. I got on with him awfully well. But he is Her Majesty's, His Majesty's representative, in other words, royalty representative, in that country. And I can't go poisoning the air. He's turned me down, they've turned me down. And I don't see that you can, really. I mean, even Mr. Churchill or so on, they could do it, but it's not altogether constitutional when the representative of the king is out there, and agree. So he thought a bit, and he went away for a few minutes, he came back, look, I've drafted this, do you agree? To Palestine government. We are rather worried about the security. Or are you satisfied about the security of your government buildings? And can we help? The thing came back, it obviously didn't get past the chief secretary. Came back and said, quite all right, thanks for it. And that was in May 1946, and in July, 90-odd of the very nice fellows, Jews, mostly Jews, civil servants, were killed. And that's why people who met him said that Shaw was an almost crackers man.
Shaw, the first secretary.
The chief secretary. And so I didn't do anything. In fact, I wrote him friendly letters. I knew the fellow was tormented. And then he died. And then I wrote, then I offered my memoirs to the, to your lot.
Department of Documents, yes.
Yeah. Actually, the First Great War was all I offered them, you see. And they said yes, and then they said, well, we understand that there's some rather interesting stuff about Palestine.
I want to ask a couple more questions about other aspects of your time in Palestine. What about your visits to other countries? You did go on some visits to Jordan and
only to the ones immediately for which we were very interested. For instance, I went to pay my respects to the president in across the Lebanon, and I could see what was going to happen now. Of course, we all think we're very clever, you know, but I said it the whole time. There in the Lebanon, you've got the Maronites, the Christian Arabs, and you've got the Muslim Arabs. Well, all the money was in the hands, they deserved it because they made it, in the hands of the Maronites. And they owned all the racehorses. That was quite something. They owned everything, and they had a Christian Arab president. I think they still have even now. And I could see how things were going. They were very spoiled. They'd been under the French. And when I went out to my friends, the Arabs, to dinner, when I were called up there, I actually went to see how my sick police, who were in hotels up in the Cedars of Lebanon up there, it was supposed to be healthy. I brought them all away again because they weren't doing well at all. But that's what I went up for, and to say how do to the president. It was very interesting indeed. But I said, look, you cannot have this going on forever. The Muslim Arabs are going to say, why should the Christians have it all, you see? And that's what's happening now. Now, I went, of course, to, he was a great pal of mine, although a queer fellow, marvellous fellow on his own ground, was
Glubb.
Was Glubb. He was a couple of years senior to me through Woolwich, and He was a great Arabist. He spent most of his time on the telephone talking to his Arab sheikhs. And he loved them indeed. But apart from that, out of his own ground, I got on very well with him. I actually went up there to say how do to King Abdullah, who was a marvellous fellow. Really marvellous fellow. Apart from anything else, he, like Dante in Italy, he purified the Italian language, and Abdullah purified the Arab. Although you can't do that because the Arabic in the different countries is so very different, you know.
You say Glubb was quite strange. What was strange about him?
I was going to say, he was a sapper. You know that we gunners, we always say, oh, those sappers, they're all crackers. They're all thinking in terms of... I remember there was a sapper when I went out to China. He was terribly seasick, and he only came up when we were going through the Suez Canal, you see. And I was walking him up and down outside, and I said, what are... He seemed to be, you know, very interested in things. He was working out the speed of the ship by the number of white things they were passing. I said, you know, you sappers, you're all crackers. But we wouldn't let anybody else say that in the gunners. And Glubb was like that. And when I went up there and had lunch with him, I was going to have a real go with Abdullah later when he showed me his family collection of swords and said, you must come and see me more often. But on this particular occasion, I just went to say hello and lunched with Glubb. Well, there were singing birds in the passages, and there were we had almost entirely Arab food. There were turtles in the sitting room, and goodness knows, it was very fun. Now, when he came to me, I took him, and he brought his family, his little boy, about so big, dressed in Arab Legion uniform, and I took them to the King David, this very smart, cost restaurant. And the child was playing on the floor, crawling all over the place, and bumped his head on the floor and was squalling the place down. I was so ashamed. This is a typical sort of Glubb outfit. His wife was very charming. Her mother was a great friend of mine, Mrs. Forbes. She was a great Oriental enthusiast herself. And we called her the gay Mrs. Forbes. She was always like that. When I met her, she said, I'm going up to stay with the Glubbs. That's her daughter, you see. I said, oh, you're going away long. We shall miss you. She said, I'll probably spend a month or two with them. She goes back in a week. She said, haven't preserved me from that establishment. The Arabs have only got to put a terrible, poor Arab baby they want to get rid of. I'll never. He adopts them straight away. He was a strange man entirely, but a very fine Arabist.
He had very strong views about the Arab Legion and the Arabs. Did you discuss what he thought? Did you agree with him or disagree? Or
half his senior officers were chaps that I'd let him have from the Palestine police. In fact, I was some fellow, I didn't think much of him myself, but he was commanding the armoured brigade up there and so on. And,
he very much took the Arab side, though, didn't he? He had, whereas you were slightly more open, open-minded, perhaps.
No, not at all. Not at all. It was an entirely Arab country, you see. He wrote to me in 1945, and he said, you know, you people are doing all the work and you're being attacked and you've got shocking problems. I know we up here, it's all very colourful with these fellows with their fancy hatar and agal and so on, and clubs girls, they called them, you know, they had sort of ringlet down here. They're very fine. And when I was up there, making my first round, I went across at Aqaba and crossed over and was taken on by the superintendents of police from there and there. And when I was at the most marvellous place in the world, my favourite place in the world, Kerak, if you read your Bible, you'll find how that held up against the Israelis and the Moabites for 6 months, and then they had to pack it in. It was the most marvellous place up high there, with the old Roman places where 100 police were. You see, they had the Rome in those days was kept going by these legions who were in Britain and so on, and this was the most marvellous place. And when I went up there, I went into the guest place, and I was expecting to ask the head of the security, Arabs, and all the rest of them, you see, to come and have drinks there. And I had to polish up. You know, I was a... It was 20 years since I'd got my first-class interpretership in Arabic, so I had to scrub around a bit because I had to start each conversation and they'd carry on. It was marvellous. And we went then off to dinner with one of them, and we were talking all right into the night. Then they said, well, the schoolmaster, they said, you'll come and see my school in the morning before you go. I said, yes. I went there, and it was damn fine. You know, labs, and these went into all the classrooms, these charming children, very well taught and so on. So I was in where most of the older boys, you see. So I was saying, what are you going to be when you grow up? Jewish Army, Arab Army, that meant clubs lot, you see. What are you going to? Always the same, till we came to one poor little boy. And he said, Katib, that means clerk, and the whole place roared with laughter. They thought that was the funniest thing ever. So what I'm saying, it was a marvellous place. And the more you could get of the ancient feeling, like when I was seeing a camelry post down in my camelry area, the Negev, and there was this place right out in the desert, just a little place which was supposed to be their office, and outside were all the black tents of the Bedouin. My chaps were all Bedouin those. And a very nice friend of mine who was an ASP then said, there's one of the sergeants wants to talk to you. Well, I pretended out there the whole time that I didn't speak Arabic. When I was a biograph.
What was the purpose of that?
What?
Why did you do that?
Because I was very keen on languages and I helped my fellows get more and more. But they're brilliant, quite a lot of them. And I was not going to be shown up because I was very rusty by then, after 20 years, you see. So I said, all right, bring him up if he wants to speak to me. And I said, what is it that you want? So then my chap carried on, you see. And he said, I want your permission to be stationed here. It is just desert, near a water point, you see. Publicly. So I said, well, you know, you you can't do that. You've got to go where you're posted. And that is what suits us. And he said, I said, why do you want this? He said, well, you see that right in the distance at the end of the hills coming down in the shimmering heat, you could just see a little white place. He said, that is where the teacher comes once a week. And I sent my son there. So I said, well, I'll certainly do what I can for you, but it's no promise, because you've got to go where you're said. But this was the sort of feeling, the ancient feeling. You felt you were living in the old charming times of the past.
When you went on visits to other countries, what would you be hoping to achieve from the visit? Was it just goodwill, or would you actually be asking for specific things?
From whom?
Well, when you visited the Lebanon, or when you went to Transjordan, or to meet the king.
Well,
what would you be actually trying to achieve on these visits?
Well, you got to keep in, because you see the politicals. I was always very much a non-political, and when I was seeing, well, they expected it. When I first called on, this was what you had to do, on Abdullah, he said, why don't more people come to see me? Now, I'm going to fix a date now when you're coming to lunch with me, do you see? And I had to go up there again, you see?
So it was protocol, really, politeness.
Yes,
courtesy,
yes, but then, of course, you'd all got the same problems, you see. Now, Abdullah said to me, he was a very wise man, far the most wise of all the Hashemites. His dreadful old father, you know, who was kicked out by Ibn Saud with the Quran in one hand and a whip in the other. But Abdullah was a very clever fellow, very good. He sacked Glubb in the end, you know.
Why did he do that? Did he?
Because he felt that Glubb was trying to run him, I think. All right. Abdullah, the king, said to me, now, I don't want to preach to you, but be very careful in your very onerous and difficult job in Palestine. Be very careful and don't forget that you must treat the Jews, this is an Arab talking, reasonably well, because they've been through it. And you can't, you see, that's the trouble with the army out there in Palestine, under Monty before the war. They'd got this terrible army. They took over, you see. I never used it. I never used the capital punishment at all the whole time.
You mentioned, did the army come in while you were there, or did they come back after you'd left?
No, they came back while I was there. Came back while I was there. And that was very stupid. It was rather like after all these wars, when the men are wanting to be demobilized, they're wanting to get home, you see, and so they're not in a state of mind, really, that does well. And they're apt, when they came up there to Palestine.
What? When did they come back? Do you remember? What month or year?
Well, they started coming back